Hello, folks. My name is Amy, and you are listening to The 4-H Show, which stands for Health, Harmony, Happiness, and Humor. And we are live at WMRWLP at 94.5 FM on your dial. We are in Warren, Vermont. We are very privileged and lucky to be here in Warren, Vermont. And my name is Amy, and I co-host the show with Jerry. And the reason why I keep saying we is because I have a special guest in the studio today. We are very, very lucky to have someone here to have a very important conversation with us. Sherry Glevis is here in the station with us. And Sherry, among other things, is an off-grid homesteader, mother, and feminist spirituality scholar. She counsels people using birth chart astrology, tarot, and intuitive reading methods. And we are so lucky to have her here today. Her website is Sherry, S-H-E-R-R-I, Glebus, G-L-E-B-U-S.com. And in just a moment, we're going to have a conversation, a very, very important conversation. And the reason why Sherry has come all the way here to Warren to join us on the air, while she is a Vermonter, she did have to travel a ways to be here today. And the reason is to have this very important conversation. Today we are going to bring fresh air and sunshine to another subject, which seems to be our theme here on the 4-H Show, bringing fresh air and sunshine, which are healing, right? And breaking the silence around issues that importantly, that they're very important and are affecting us more and more every day. So today we are going to have a very important conversation. I used to have this conversation, this type of conversation, all the time as a health teacher, actually, with my students. And so we're going to be talking about sex stereotypes, gender stereotypes, sexuality, male, female, what is a woman? You know, all of these conversations that these days have been loaded with all sorts of landmines that seem to be keeping us from being able to bring fresh air and sunshine. And so that is our goal here today. I'm here with Sherry. We're going to be back in just a moment. First, I'm going to have you just hear from one of the experts in the field who I just discovered. Her name is Jennifer Bilek. Jennifer Bilek, B-I-L-E-K. And she just did this documentary with Big Picture Watch. And it's called Who is Behind the Trans Agenda? And so we're just going to listen to a few minutes of that while I get the headphones figured out and the microphones, and we'll come back with our live guest. But I think Jennifer is going to sort of set the tone here for us. She's done a lot of research into the agenda part of this, and I just want to be perfectly clear. I personally was in the background of one of the first people in Vermont pushing for HIV and AIDS education, sexuality education. I helped write some of the curricula in Vermont that has brought sexuality education to preschoolers and children. And my work in that field was to bring fresh air and sunshine so that abuse would end, right? Because silence is where abuse thrives. And so our whole goal here today is to just break that silence, to just allow the voice, people's voices, and that's what community radio is all about. So we're going to give a little listen here to Jennifer to kind of set the tone. She's talking about the agenda, not people, we love all people. I love all people. I want everyone to be proud of who they are and to love themselves, because I know you're all beautiful, amazing people, all right? No matter what your background or thoughts or beliefs or body or anything, I want you to know that you are stardust and you're amazing. But what we are going to really just talk about here is the agenda and how quickly this all happened and without any debate or discussion, right? That's the part that troubles me. So we're going to work on that aspect of it today, bringing fresh air and sunshine and the voice, which is Venus, which Sherry can help us understand too, the Venus connection here. Thank you for joining me. Let's get started.
God, I think we should just throw the whole thing out, honestly. Even as a feminist, I think that, because it's just so, it's so convoluted now. It's just ridiculous, you know. I mean, you have, you have a female body. That's really the only thing that makes me a female, is my female body. It's not because I like long hair or because I like pink nails or want to run around in high heels or, you know, I cry myself to sleep every night. You know, no, it's none of those things. Those things are socially constructed, right? But they do have some relation, some, you know, small relationship to biology, you know? Like testosterone really drives male aggression. I mean, even the women that are, you know, having their sex medically attacked, who call themselves, you know, men, discuss how aggressive it makes them feel. We all have estrogen and testosterone, you know, but like overwhelming the body that's not meant for that causes changes, right? So there are propensities, and I really just say that with such caution, you know, like, you know, propensities, you know, of women and men to act a certain way because of their biology, you know. We have, generally speaking, smaller hands. We take care of infants. It makes sense. But, you know, when you get into, you know, female brains are smaller and they don't read as well, or, you know, men are better at math, or, you know, all those things are just ridiculous stereotypes, right? But, you know, it's very difficult to talk about all of those things in this particular climate, you know? So you have, you know, conservatives, for instance, going, no, it's, you know, gender is not a social construct, right? Females do like to do all these things, right? And then you have radical feminists screaming that it's totally a social construct. I don't think any of those things is actually real. You know, I think it hovers somewhere in between. But feminists sort of, you know, they wanted to make to sort of explain the difference between, you know, our biology and the role that is constructed for us, under male supremacy, basically. You know, the attributes, you know, that are docile and non-active and demure and, you know, whereas men get all the active qualities, you know, assertive, you know, take action, blah, blah, blah. So it was originally meant to talk about that hierarchy, right? But now it's like, because like I said, in this particular environment, it's completely useless. Just throw it the hell out, you know? Talk about sex, because while you're discussing gender, the state, the corporate state, is running away with human sexual reproduction and transferring it to the tech sector. Women are being erased in language and law. It's like we don't exist. You know, rapists are being, you know, put in women's prisons because it doesn't matter. You know, sex doesn't matter. Only gender identity matters. The feeling that you have about yourself matters. So women are being erased in language and law. And mostly women are having their biology deconstructed. You know, young women are getting the double mastectomies. You know, they're having their ovaries removed. They're having their wombs removed, you know. It's way, way top heavy with young women having their bodies, their sex bodies, medically attacked. So this isn't just some ideological thing going around of female erasure. This is actually happening. And you have to ask the question, well, why is this happening? Why would they do that? And when you follow the money, like I do, you find the answers. It's all going to the tech sector, to the, you know, they want to take over human reproduction with technology. People worry about, you know, well, this is crazy. Where is it going? And, you know, but look at where it is. It's absolute madness out there. You can't talk about reality without bringing the law down upon you. Women are being arrested, legally arrested for saying that, you know, men can't be women. So where it's going? You know, the money points to, you know, them sort of overlaying a virtual reality over the natural world and subjugating the natural world. All the big techie guys, they're all talking about it. They don't hide it. Metaverse for Zuckerberg, Singularity for Ray Kurzweil, who's also mentored Martin Rothblatt. He says we're, you know, in very short order, we're going to be living as a different species. We're going to be post-human. Now, he's considered one of our greatest intellectuals, public intellectuals. He works for Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. And he says that, you know, we're building a virtual reality. that we actually live in a virtual reality already, which I actually agree with, and that it's going to be more solidified and it's going to be more important than and more significant than the natural world. And this is where they're taking this. Whether they get there or not is anybody's guess, because there's not a whole lot of planet left for them to destroy and colonize in order to get the resources to build the tech that they need to do this. However, but that's never stopped anybody. Do you know what I mean? We can't do it. Is, you know, we shouldn't do it. Never stopped anybody.
All right, folks. So my name is Amy, and you are listening to WMRW. And I have live with me on the show today, Sherry Glevis.
Hello.
Hello. And I did start with that recording mostly because we had to get our headphones set up and things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, folks, sorry about that. We sort of launched right in. Mm-hmm. We were just listening to Jennifer Billick, who has just done a really interesting documentary. It's just about, I think, an hour, a little under an hour of her explaining this whole thing, you know, the ties to the money and things like that. So we are just going to be discussing today, you know, the context that women find themselves in, women and girls, mm-hmm. in this current climate, and bringing mm-hmm. voice to that. Thank you for coming over, Sherry.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah. So where should we begin? Should we begin with you and your journey, or?
Well, I can tell you how I sort of stumbled into this particular issue besides my feminist scholarship.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that.
I completed a graduate degree in 2007, basically revisiting religious history and spiritual history from a feminist lens. So it was a fascinating study, you know, of just new archaeological perspectives on, you know, what we found in prehistory and what that says about the cosmological view of prehistoric people and so on and so forth. So I became deeply engrossed in goddess spirituality, you know, and sort of discovering the old pre-Christian religions that were heavily feminine based, you know, and goddess based and so on and so forth. So fast forward to around 2019, probably, I found myself renovating an off-grid cabin. And it was sort of a dream of mine, you know, to do this off-grid, you know, in the forest kind of life.
And on your own, as a woman.
Yeah, I ended up being on my own, and I it was 3/4 mile into the forest. I was like surrounded by 700 acres of forest with no other humans, and part of what I needed to do to live in this cabin was renovate it. So I was working very hard, and I think I was on my third year of renovating and settling into this cabin, like getting into the cycle of putting up my wood and all of that. When the owner of the cabin wanted to start an intentional community about 3/4 mile down the mountain where she lived, and I thought that was wonderful, you know, because I wanted neighbors, I wanted friends, you know, I wanted community around me. So a bunch of younger people, you know, at the time I was around 49, I think, or, you know, turning 50. And some young, what I consider younger people in their 20s, you know, a bunch of them came to live on the land, you know, at the bottom of the mountain. I thought, great.
Great, yeah.
However, I guess there was a gap in my view of popular culture, or I should say counterculture, you know, because I guess it would be considered counterculture.
Right, which you thought maybe you were part of.
I thought I was.
You were the epitome of a counterculture.
I've been a lifelong leftist, you know, countercultural movement, you know, and I still am. Everything I do is pretty non-conventional.
Yeah, and breaking stereotypes. And
Yeah, absolutely. So the younger counterculture folks showed up, and they were using the they-them pronouns, which I had never heard of. And, you know, it's not that I opposed them. I was just like, I just never heard of that before. I'd never encountered anyone that requested that of me. And I didn't totally understand it, but I was like, oh, okay, I guess this is a new young person trend. And I did my best to honor, you know, and respect the language they wanted me to use about them and so on and so forth. Well, also around that time, I was just starting to look out into the world a little bit more via the internet. And I was starting to see some of my, I guess you would say, mentors in feminist spirituality and feminist scholarship were having conflicts with other, I guess you could say, feminists. I didn't understand it all at the time, about gender ideology, you know, and sex. And I was noticing some pretty harsh things going on, like some of these other feminist scholars being deplatformed, for example, from conferences, and, you know, their books being boycotted, and I was like, wait a minute, what is going on here? And I started asking questions, because I didn't even understand this language. You know, there was a whole ideology that I had missed. You know, come to find out, it actually wasn't very old, so, you know, it's understandable that I didn't know about any of this. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized that there was a major conflict going on between what I will refer to now as gender ideologues, which is a new ideology. It's a new worldview about gender and sex. And there was a clash. And as I looked into it and I started thinking it through and then realizing how I'm actually living with these new gender ideologues in this intentional community, and privately realizing I don't agree, you know, with their views. They're actually opposed to my previous feminist views. So that particular, I wouldn't even call it a conflict, because there was no debate, you know, there was no conversation allowed. As soon as I started asking them questions.
To try to understand.
Yeah, yes, exactly, because I couldn't hide who I was and my background, and if I'm going to be part of this community and they're going to be my friends and neighbors, it was important for me at that point to ask questions and sort of work out, like, where we all stand.
Yeah.
But when I did that, I found myself basically being, I don't know any more accurate way to put it, hated. You know, they literally called me a bigot, and ultimately I was kicked out of the cabin. Like, these young people didn't want to live near me, and to this day I've never had a sit down face to face conversation with any of them.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, the silencing and lack of communication is exactly what we want to change. You know, just that, just a coming to the table.
Exactly.
And let's just talk, help me understand.
Exactly. It's not a battle of belief. It's the freedom to believe what we want to believe and to respect that. And that was the irony for me as a lifetime leftist, you know, preaching tolerance, you know, and fighting for, you know, that.
Hey, man, can't we just come together and talk about it? You know, the hippies have that stereotype, you know.
Right, like, exactly.
Hey, man, let's just chat.
Exactly.
You know? Let's rap about it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm open to learning. And, you know, uh-huh. And then to suddenly find myself being punished for wrong think by people that I thought were the open-minded ones.
Wrong think. That's a new one for me. So it's not just using the right words. We're actually now trying to even get further inside of people's sovereignty and tell them what's the right way to think. Yes, it's a slippery slope there. It's very right. So let's talk a little bit more about how it sort of came so quickly. What is kind of going on here? What do you mean, like, came quickly? All of a sudden, like, these young folks show up. Where do they get the ideas from? And how did we, as, you know, 50-something-year-old feminists, like, and I have other friends, too, who I've talked to off the record. Feminists right away started, like, pulling each other aside, literally into bathrooms. I mean, I was at a sex training, a sexual health training a few years ago, and we were being told, you know, about this, you know, you can't use these words. And I'm a sex educator. I'm trying to figure out how do I talk about menstruation and not women, you know? And so we literally had to pull, like, we pulled the instructor, a few women pulled the instructor into the ladies' room. This was when we could still do that privately. It was the only space we knew of at this training that we could talk to her and say, can you just help us understand? We're afraid to even say this in the main education class that we're in, but how do we do this? Like, this doesn't make sense to us. And she had no, she goes, I know, I don't know. So there's this, you know, we were already fleeing kind of in the beginning and trying to wrap our heads around it. So where did this come from? What's going on?
Well, you played the Jennifer Bielik clip, and and I think she has been the greatest asset in putting all together where this comes from, because, like she said, she follows the money. And many of us noticed that this doesn't fit what a civil rights movement is. You know, a lot of people still think that this is about civil rights. You know, they think it's the next like civil rights and tolerance, you know. But those of us who've been involved in civil rights movements for some time, you know, like you talked about your past activism, and I was very heavily involved, like, back in 1999 and 2000 in the gay marriage movement in Vermont. And I've always been behind those movements. You know, I used to teach Black history and the Holocaust history, and, you know, my family fought the Nazis. I, like, know a lot about a lot of this history. So that's what struck me right away. Like, this doesn't fit a civil rights movement. You know, it's not grassroots, and it came upon us too quickly, and it was irrational. You know, it didn't make sense. Like, and, you know, one way you can tell is that these gender activists never give specific examples. For example, they will say, they literally will say, there's a trans genocide, you know, where, you know, there's so many trans people being murdered every year and so on and so forth. So they'll use that as an example. But, and I actually learned this from trans people, you know, the trans people are also opposing this, you know, this irrational ideology. And, you know, I actually learned this from a trans person, where she said, I researched all of these trans murders, you know, that are cited constantly as an example of how trans people are oppressed. And maybe, like, one of the 200 murders, you know, that they're saying happened around the world a year was actually, might be trans-related. You know? So the perspective was skewed, and the narrative about the oppression didn't really make sense. And how did this ideology, like you said, you know, that's the thing, it took hold within 5 to 10 years all across the Western world, UK, New Zealand, and what doesn't fit other civil rights movements is that this ideology got quickly put into policy and law almost at the same time all over the world.
We covered it here on the 4-H show. We were covering Prop 5 in the fall, mm-hmm. and which was the abortion rights. That's how it was couched, as an abortion rights amendment to mm-hmm. our Constitution in Vermont, mm-hmm. which is worded really interestingly. And we had the ACLU on the show. We had a legislator who was in favor of it and a legislator who was opposed. And the legislator in favor of it could give no specific examples of A, like the need for it, mm-hmm. or B, how this would apply, C, why wasn't mm-hmm. the word woman in here, mm-hmm. why reproduction. I mean, you know, it was worded so vaguely, and it entrenched now that Vermonters have voted for it, is now we have a constitutional amendment that is it's more unshakable than any other constitutional right that we have, and it gives individuals this right. Mm-hmm. And these experts agreed it includes children to make these gender reassignment decisions. You know, it's beyond reproduction. It's about mm-hmm. People's reproductive choices as far as being able to change their own anatomy. And even at a young mm-hmm. age, we're talking children. So, you know, of course, Jerry and I, you know, just wanted to bring conversation, like, well, this is big. Mm-hmm. Let's talk mm-hmm. about it. Let's mm-hmm. talk about this. Mm-hmm. Maybe mm-hmm. first would be nice, mm-hmm. but it's already a done deal, Rabbit, mm-hmm. all around the world.
Yes, and you know, you asked where it came from, which is a complex question. But clearly, there are huge profits being made by, as Jennifer Bielik says, the medical industrial complex. Example, in 2007, the first gender clinic opened, you know, serving children, gender clinic in Boston. And now, this is the United States that I'm referring to. Now in the United States, there are over 200 gender clinics.
Wow. So 50 states. I mean, chances are they're in every state.
And there's and hospitals and health clinics are openly admitting now that this has become one of their biggest money makers. Mm-hmm. You know, gender.
So what are some of the services that these, because I know, like, people like me, I mean, I'm a health educator, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. when my students, mm-hmm. I had to be informed, first misinformed by my students, and then mm-hmm. I had to go check their facts and try mm-hmm. to come back to them with reality, and they wouldn't hear it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had a sixth grader first tell me about maybe 6 years ago, I identify as a girl. He's not the first one who had that, you mm-hmm. know, a different gender they identified as. Mm-hmm. However, he was telling me that he could get surgery and he would be a functioning woman. And yeah. He was 11
yeah.
years old. And I went and did research. I was like, that's strange, as far as mm-hmm. I know. You know, and I mm-hmm. looked it up, like, no. You know, mm-hmm. I've got top experts saying, no, mm-hmm. that's not true. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't convince the student, because mm-hmm. they were watching all this. They were accessing all this information online that was convincing them that they could become a functioning woman.
Absolutely. It's a huge subculture. And it's reached a lot of children through the internet. It used to be really big on Tumblr. You know, some people say that's how they first start. That's how, I shouldn't say they, because we don't know what I'm talking about. But this is how children first became, I guess, indoctrinated. You know, young people always create countercultures, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was a deadhead and a hippie, you know, uh-huh. back in the day. And, you know, my daughter was into all that gaming culture and what was that, Japanese?
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was emo, you know, and you know, there's goth, you know, that, you know, and steampunk, you know, mm-hmm. and just, all the, you know, kids have always done this. And so it's not surprising, you know, that there's this gender trend.
Mm-hmm. It's like a new frontier.
It's a new frontier in, you know, for kids, where they find a sense of belonging, you know, and children, you know, preteens and teenagers have always struggled with identity. You know, it's part of going through puberty. So it did fast become a young person resistance culture or whatever.
But then these clinics, what can the clinic do for a...
Right, exactly. Well, it starts with this psychiatric and psychological... is it an industry field? Mm-hmm. because quickly... the policy changed around what's called affirmation only is the only thing acceptable now that psychologists and psychiatrists can do. Affirmation means if a young person comes and says, I'm struggling with my gender identity, psychologists and therapists are not allowed to question that, only affirm. Okay, so if you're a girl feeling like a boy, then you are. You know, you can't...
Instead of like, let's explore this.
Yes.
What is this about for you? Tell me more.
Right,
blah, blah,
right,
blah.
Right. Like, there might be trauma behind it. You know, there could be all these other things behind it,
right,
including the social influence. So there's that. It starts there. And then young people, as young as 8 years old, now as a routine, can be put on these puberty-blocking drugs.
So what is a... I mean, I hear mm-hmm, that in the front. Mm-hmm. What is a puberty blocking drug? What is it?
It was originally a drug developed to stop precocious puberty in young people, which, you know, which is occasionally a problem, like when a 5-year-old starts going through puberty.
Yes, I have some parents I worked with as a teacher who, told me that they were struggling. And it can be intense. And who knows what's causing that, right? The intense testosterone in an 8-year-old boy. That's, you know, why is puberty mm-hmm. coming on so early? Mm-hmm. You know, there probably are some environmental factors there or whatnot. So it is a real thing, and it happens occasionally. Thing. Yeah.
Yep. So this one particular, the name is Lupron. You know, Lupron, so I'll refer to Lupron as a puberty-blocking drug.
It sort of slows down that?
It stops it. Like, it suppresses hormones. You know, so it stops the production of hormones. So it sterilizes people, you know. I mean, the outcome for 99% of any child who's put on puberty-blocking drugs for a year is going to be loss of fertility. In fact, for a time, these drugs were used in prisons to sterilize sex offenders, you know, and pedophiles, and they actually stopped that practice because of the side effects.
Because it's not even, like, constitutional to take away a convicted rapist's right to have children, to procreate future, right? I mean,
somehow it's become acceptable.
As a
for
treatment.
Children, and again, because of the oppression narrative, where usually suicide is used as a rationale. It's common in the medical community for doctors to say to parents, "Would you rather have a son? You know, if you're speaking about a girl who wants to be a boy, would you rather have an alive son or a dead daughter?" You know, they it's literally things that, and I know parents who've had the pediatrician say this to them. You know, I know people, so this isn't, you know, just something I read, you know, in an article. Mm-hmm. Like, this is very real for many, many people. So parents kind of get emotionally blackmailed into consenting to these drugs, and the idea of the puberty blocking drug is so that the child who may be gender dysphoric, you know, gender dysphoria is a real thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to affect like 0.5% of the population or less. So it's supposed to be a way to stop that from happening.
Stop them from not liking themselves.
Developing, right, exactly.
Or help them like them, right?
Exactly.
By liking their physical body.
Right, exactly. And and we know that the majority, if a young person is put on these puberty-blocking drugs for a year or longer, the majority of these children will then go on to take what I call wrong sex hormones. So a girl would be put on testosterone, you know, around the age of 16 or something, you know, around mm-hmm. there.
To try to, like, curb her development to become a man, right? Is that the theory?
Right. So a girl who's put on testosterone will absolutely get a deep voice. It's irreversible. I mean, she'll have a deep voice for the rest of her life. She'll grow facial hair, you know, like mustache, and, you know, that'll make her feel probably a little more aggressive, you know, things mm-hmm. of that nature. And a boy who takes estrogen will, you know, his genitals will shrink, you know, his facial features will soften, and his skin will soften, his muscles will probably weaken, and often, not as much as girls that get a deep voice, but they'll also get a more feminine sounding voice. So that's the trajectory, mm-hmm. you know, of that gender clinics will put children on who may be gender dysphoric.
Mm.
And as far as surgery, the majority of trans people don't get bottom surgery, although it's becoming more and more sought after. You know, you had the experience where kids are being fed a narrative that if you want to be the opposite sex, a surgeon will make you into an opposite sex,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, is a lie. You can only simulate, you know, with body modification.
It's plastic surgery. It's more of for the visual likeness,
right.
Not the function.
It doesn't function. But still, trans bottom surgery is not, you know, is not the majority of trans people don't get it.
Okay.
However, double mastectomies have become a trend among young girls. And unfortunately, the medical community and state governments across the country allow minor girls in some states without parental consent as young as 13 years old, 13 in California, 15 in Oregon, to get their healthy breasts removed if that's what they want. And this trans culture has embraced such a thing, as well as binders. I didn't mention binders.
Ooh,
which are also very popular with young girls, even if they don't totally identify as the opposite sex. You know, they mm-hmm. just want to appear more masculine. Yeah, binders are like a very, very, very tight bra that flattens the chest.
Mm.
And I don't even feel like I need to talk about the downside of such a thing.
Well, it reminds me of a corset.
Right, exactly.
And I remember researching, you know, when I was studying feminism and women mm-hmm. and how we've been mm-hmm. constricted by fashion and mm-hmm. what corsets did to women. You can't mm-hmm. breathe. I know that's mm-hmm. one major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that it would also constrict, well, the lower abdomen, you know, it would be the reproductive organs could become damaged.
Yes.
So I'd imagine the breasts could become damaged by binding.
Yeah, they absolutely can. It's dangerous, and even ribs can be broken.
Oh my!
Like, you know, if they're worn too
oh.
much, and so consequently, you have a trend among young people who now just believe if I want a flatter chest, if I want a more masculine look to my chest, no problem.
Right.
And
so it's informed consent again. We're getting back to kind of a theme here on the 4-H show, which is mm-hmm. do people know when they make medical decisions, are they being informed and fully informed of the consequences?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I think what we're going to continue to see, we're seeing it now, is a lot of detransitioners.
What's that? Tell me, that was interesting.
Those are people who realize they've made a mistake and, you know, say, oh, I'm not really trans. There's already been lawsuits. One of the most prolific is probably in the UK. It was December of 2021, maybe. This young woman named Kira Bell came forward at the age of 21 and sued the Tavistock Gender Clinic in the UK, which at the time was the biggest gender clinic in the UK. They've actually now been shut down. by the NIH there, because so many, you know, there's lawsuits coming, you know, a lot of their staff quit, you know, whistleblowers started to speak out because they didn't feel right about the way young people were just quickly put on this path.
Mm-hmm.
So Kira Bell had put, you know, was put on puberty blockers around the age of 14, had a double mastectomy at the age of 16. She has a permanent deep voice, you know, and around the age of 21 realized, oh my goodness, I'm just a lesbian. You know, I made a mistake. I'm not a man. And sued the Tavistock Gender Clinic. And actually won. So I think this is the trajectory of the future. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as more and more people, there's a big subreddit group called D-Trans. And it's grown just in the past year. Thousands of new members. Just, you know, there are now 20,000 detransitioners on the subreddit group. So that we're probably looking at the tip of the iceberg there.
Yeah, of people, you know, like people do. They change their mind, you know, about mm-hmm. their sexuality. I mean, how many, you know, 40-year-olds come out as gay, right? So we are, you know, our lives are full of change. But when mm-hmm. we make a decision like that, you know, as a health teacher, what totally breaks my heart yes. is the self-loathing that I'm seeing in youth, you know, through this type of activity and all mm-hmm. types of things that are being sort of presented to youth as mm-hmm. options, mm-hmm. life choices. But these are pretty dangerous, you know, harmful, and to not love yourself and make a permanent change to your bodies.
Yeah, what really blows me away is it's presented in the exact opposite way, as a way to be yourself, you know, to liberate yourself, you know, to be who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And so young people that take this path, there are such a thing as real transsexuals. You know, there mm-hmm. are people with gender dysphoria who find transitioning cures the pain and discomfort that they've experienced for a long time. But again, those people are tiny, tiny, tiny minority. And now we're seeing an explosion. You know, there are some schools in the UK and the United States where 1 out of 5 children have a trans identity. And it doesn't even have to be gender dysphoria anymore. You mm-hmm. know, it's just something you choose. So sorry, I went off on a little bit of a tangent. But you had asked me
the self-loathing.
Oh, the self-loathing, exactly. And it's presented as exactly the opposite. Like, this is a way to be yourself, feel comfortable in your body, be who you are. And that's what really sort of propelled me to speak up. I couldn't take the irrationality, you know, mm-hmm. of these viewpoints. Because, you know, just thinking it through, it's like how can changing the body that you were born in, you know, sterilizing yourself, cutting off healthy body parts, possibly be a path to being your authentic self?
Right.
It, you know, it's a form of disassociation from the body. Like, yeah. Literally hating the body you're born in, believing you're born in the wrong body. There can't be anything more self-loathing than that.
That I'm a mistake. Right. And then a distrust, you know, in God or spirituality or Mother Earth or the great creator, however you call it,
bingo.
That created us, made a mistake. I mean, there's that theme too, that God made a mistake. I keep mm-hmm. hearing that.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm. And I used to work with, you know, students who had cerebral palsy and all mm-hmm. sorts of severe, you know, mm-hmm. cleft palate, mm-hmm. severe physical deformities that made mm-hmm. life hard for them mm-hmm. and that we've figured out how it's a magical thinking to think that we've solved this one aspect mm-hmm. you know, for this one group of people mm-hmm. and we're just ignoring all the rest. Why can't mm-hmm. we help people with legs that don't work, you know? Why
mm-hmm.
if we can really do magical work like this, there's sort of like a cart before the horse here. Like, wait a minute. Why are we addressing this first? And so I want to make sure, I mean, it's painful to think of folks and kids and people in these situations and making these, you know, confronting these decisions. And things. How about let's just make sure that we cover some of the discrimination for folks who have spoken out, because there is also a big silencing and shaming of just the conversation we're having right now, Sherry.
Absolutely.
I'm on the air right now with Sherry Glebis. Sherry is, among other things, an off-grid homesteader, a mother and feminist, a spirituality scholar. She counsels people using birth chart astrology, tarot, and intuitive reading methods. And her website is sherryglebis.com. And we'll give that again at the end. But how are folks like you and others around the world who have sort of, you know, said, hey, wait a minute, let's talk about this. How is the world reacting? How is the media reacting?
Well, a few years ago, the punishments were severe. Mm-hmm. They still are. But I do think we've made some headway in the past 3 years. I mean, I was kicked out of my home, and I started following the UK gender politics because they were a little bit ahead of us over there, just in their embracing of you know, gender ideology and the consequent pushback, which, you know, they really started this movement that we call gender critical. You know, in the UK, where they push back against gender ideology.
And gender critical.
Gender critical is the name of the, I guess, community in which people have organized or just found camaraderie. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the first things I did was find these folks. And I was following the UK gender politics at the time, right around the same time I was getting kicked out of the cat. Well, right before, this woman named Maya Forstatter, again, she's around our age. So these are women who identify as feminists, you know, who are instrumental in the whole feminist movement. And this woman, Maya Forstatter, was tweeting on her personal Twitter page about the impact on women's rights, you know, from gender ideology policy in the UK, and you know, saying things like people can't change their sex, you know, this doesn't make sense, you know, women can't be men, you know, men can't give birth, you know, just statements that 20 years ago everybody would just agree. I mean, if you said otherwise, you know,
right,
people would think you were insane. Well, she lost her job. You know, she worked for some kind of economic think tank at the time, and this is how the whole J.K. Rowling controversy started, because J.K. Rowling at the time tweeted in support of Maya Forstatter, like saying, I stand with Maya Forstatter. You know, people can identify however they want. They can dress however they want. They can sleep with whoever they want. You know, they can change their name, whatever. But biology is real, and it matters. You know, that's basically what J.K. Rowling said. And then she had, there was a hashtag, I stand with Maya Forstatter. Some of our listeners might know the tirade of hate that has been thrust upon J.K. Rowling. I mean, to this day, she gets death threats. People show up at her house. You can look all over the internet and find hate about J.K. Rowling. People were burning her books because she stood up for Maya Forstatter. This is just an example of what has been happening.
Yeah, and didn't something just happen recently? Was it in New Zealand?
Oh, in New Zealand, okay.
Hot off the press news here.
Well, one of the most prolific gender-critical activists in the UK is a woman named Kelly J. Keene. She started out with a pseudonym of Posy Parker. And she's grown this movement all over the world. Opponents call it an anti-trans movement, but she's really pro-woman. You know, her basic stance is that we don't want men in our single-sex spaces. you know, and that's our sports, our locker rooms, our prisons, our domestic violence shelters, you know.
That these were spaces women created.
Right.
Through activism.
Right.
And we want to keep them
right,
private. Private. Have
right.
privacy.
And
for
we've
women.
Been losing it, that. We've mm-hmm. been losing this all over the Western world. So Posy Parker started at Speaker's Corner in the UK. It's a famous park where I can't remember which city it's in. It's a park where traditionally, since the Middle Ages, there's a podium and people can come and speak their mind, you know, without punishment, you know,
kind of like MR does.
Right, exactly. And so she started a once a month Speaker's Corner event called Let Women Speak. And it grew, and, you know, people were even traveling from Ireland, you know, to attend this Let Women Speak event.
And because it was so rare and beautiful
yeah,
to have this freedom
yeah,
space.
Yeah, and there's a whole cast of characters over in the UK. You know, anybody that's interested in this should follow this. You know, you've got Graham Linehan and, you know, Mr. Meadow. Some men jumped on board, you know, and Posy or Kelly J. Keene started having these Let Women Speak events. In different parts of the Western world. Mm-hmm. She fits the part of the iconic activist because she looks just like Marilyn Monroe.
She looks like Marilyn
she
Monroe.
Does. She does. She has the same platinum blonde hairstyle and the red lipstick, and, you know, and she looks exactly like Marilyn Monroe. So she stands out in a crowd already.
Mm-hmm.
So New Zealand, I know we're limited on time, so I won't go into the whole experience in Portland and all that before this, but it was either last week or the week before, she held one of these Let Women Speak events in New Zealand. And from what I understand, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, as well as the New Zealand media, kind of trashed her for weeks before the event as anti-trans activist and, you know, a right-winger. I'm laughing because she's voted liberal, like Labour, in the UK her entire life. Anyway, women who do this work and, you know, face the crowds and speak the things that we're speaking right now behind these microphones are in danger. Trans activists are ruthless, actually, in the way they will show up to oppose and threaten women with violence and even carry out violence. So fortunately, you know, Posy Parker has raised enough money to hire professional, what do you call it?
Security?
Security, yeah. So she had security.
Wow.
You know, private security.
She's under threat enough. She can't walk around because she's...
Right, exactly. And even with the private security, a mob of trans activists showed up to this Let Women Speak event and became physically violent, punched a 70-year-old woman in the face twice, like, you know, just busted the 70-year-old woman's face. And somebody managed to throw a can of tomato soup onto Posy Parker. So, you know, I brought up her appearance. You got the platinum blonde hair now, and it's all stained with red tomato soup. And then the mob, rushed her. And if it wasn't for her security, she would be dead. I saw the footage. It was absolutely terrifying. You could see the terror in her face. Like, she was literally being crushed and attacked by a mob.
By a mob?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And we know that is the lowest form of human intelligence, is a mob.
And this isn't an isolated example. You know, a few years ago, a mob like this attacked a group of women in the UK who had a feminist meeting to talk about the effects of gender ideology on women's rights. And when they came out, they were met with one of these trans activist mobs. And this, at the time, Maria McLaughlin was her name. She, a 60-something-year-old woman, was physically assaulted and by a man identifying as a woman. She pressed charges. And in court, the judge made her refer to this young man as she, her. And, you know, there are just all of these ways that women, just for wanting to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, we've been aware of transsexuals, but this is different. And now we're just supposed to accept no separation in among the sexes, and we don't want this. We worked to have our own sports. You know, mm-hmm. We even had to advocate for our own public bathrooms in the Western world.
Yeah, you were telling me that there was women who advocated for public bathrooms.
That's right.
So that women could access public life. Our biology, we need restrooms more often.
That's right. It was actually the Australian women who did it first. In the United States. Like in the 1840s, they were campaigning down in Australia to have their own public bathrooms.
Oh, fantastical.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So these are things that women have worked really hard for.
Yes.
And it's... You know, right now, the point of our show here today, right, is to bring voice to people, mm-hmm. to break the silence around mm-hmm. these issues, mm-hmm. bring fresh air and sunshine. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I've been so honored to be joined here by Sherry Glebis. Her website is Sherry, Sherri, Glebis, Glebus.com. And you can find her there. We have just about a minute before we're going to wrap up for the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. We are going to continue, though, for those of you who are listening live. We're going to open the phone lines. Mm-hmm. Sherry and I want to talk with people. Mm-hmm. That's what we love to do. We mm-hmm. love people. We love you. Mm-hmm. We want everyone to feel great and feel heard. Mm-hmm. So we are going to open the phone lines. But with just a minute left before we break for the top of the hour, anything last you want to say, Sherry?
Well, it's my deep desire that more people speak. I know that we're the majority. The majority still believes there are two sexes, male and female, and those matter. And we've sort of been bullied into silence, and I hope that we can break that silence.
Great. I'm going to take this call. We're going to go to Hal. Thank you for joining me, folks. We will be back for the phone calls. If you're calling me, hold on. I'll be with you in 1 second. Thanks for joining us. Hello, folks. This is Amy of the 4-H Show, and I just want to remind you that you are listening to WMRWLP Warren. We're streaming from Warren. We are live in Warren, Vermont at 94.5 on your dial. You can also find us online at WMRW.org. And you can find any show on WMRW for up to 2 weeks in the archive there at the Spinatron link. And you can also find previous episodes of the 4-H Show that we are doing right now if you go to VT, like Vermont, VTMaskSurvey.com. You'll find a 4-H tab there where I keep a library of all the shows that Jerry and I have done because we're just so excited about our guests. They're just such great people. And so we've got a caller on the line. Let me work out the phone calls, and let me just remind you that the following and preceding program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, RootsWork. Let me work this phone here, guys. Hold on a second.
Thank you.
Hello, Tim? Or caller?
During the conversation, so I'll try to make myself make sense. So when groups don't like other groups, I'm going to use Vermont as an example. When, say, a Republican comes to UVM, all of a sudden a big crowd comes and doesn't want them to speak because they don't like what they have to say. And so basically in that case, they will be in enough force to stifle the free speech. So mm-hmm. when we're talking about sexuality and gender, most people are afraid to talk about sexuality. They make it that sexuality has to be between a man and a woman, which is normal. So when you do anything that is varied from that, then it is, you know, quote unquote, morally wrong. Mm-hmm. So when you bring gender into it, I'm just seeing a lot of times it's like, okay, so as kids, you're going through all sorts of changes. Your curiosity, you don't know which way's up, and you're learning. It's a process of learning. Mm-hmm. And it's something that each of us have to do on our own. And when people start pushing thoughts and ideas on you at a young age, then that can change your way of being. Mm-hmm. But as far as sexuality, everyone's afraid to talk about it. Like it's a four-letter word, which is something that is a good thing. And when you start saying, okay, women can't have sex with women, men can't have sex with men, so then it's like, oh, well, I want to have sex with a guy, for example, so therefore I must change my gender to mm-hmm. be a female in order to comply with the norm. Mm-hmm. And the gender thing's been around for a long time, and you know, and I've on my show I've had gay people on and stuff like that. But here we have Gay Pride Weekend here in the Valley, and I'm hearing all the slurs, all the jokes, and stuff like that. So you can't legislate people into doing something, or it has to be something that people have to, again, have the dialogue that you're having now, and talk back and forth, trying to understand and have compassion for someone who has a different view. It doesn't necessarily have to be for you, but you know, accept someone else's feelings, you know. But when you're starting to get kids at a very young age and wanting them to change their gender and parents not to have control over that, to me that's very messed up, because the government and the schools are basically trying to control people from the get-go and eliminate the family unit. It was like when Ron Reagan was president, and he had kids turning their parents in for, like, weed and mm-hmm. drugs and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I work with someone who had that happen, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I see this whole gender thing again, it's taking away, it's breaking apart the family unit. And again, back to the concept, I mean, what do you think? I mean, people are afraid to talk about sex, am I right or wrong?
I'm not sure about that. This is Sherry speaking about talking about sex, because I feel that sexuality is a different conversation than gender ideology. But I am 100% agreeing with what you're saying about the way it's broken up families. I've seen it, I know. And there's a great indie film out right now. It's called Dead Name. It can be kind mm-hmm. of hard to find because it's been canceled, you know, off different Vimeo and different platforms. But it's a film that highlights three families and the effect that gender ideology has had on these families. And it's heartbreaking.
Right.
I'm going to go so far as to say that this has become a kind of cult, because the thought behind it is that if your parents disagree with your transition or question your transitioning, then they are hateful bigots and toxic and you must separate from them.
Right. But see, that can also happen if it's different ethnic groups. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like, you know, watching a TV show where the daughter wants to have sex with this guy that's older and who happens to be black, and then mm-hmm. since her dad is sort of freaking about her having sex, mm-hmm. he basically tries to stop it. Then she starts saying, oh, you're racist, puts it on the internet and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But to me, I don't know, the whole gender and sexuality thing, I mean, to me, it is somewhat connected. I mean, because it doesn't necessarily all come back to sex, but that is part of it. And, you know, okay, identifying as a woman and stuff like that. To me, since guys have X and Y chromosomes, I mean, we're sort of split already. You know, so you can technically go either way. You know, and again, what happens during birth and stuff, I mean, some people, I believe they really feel that way, and I'm totally fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a problem with that. But then when you start getting mad at me, and when you brought up the whole trans people getting killed in the world, 200, you know, you're making it like it's this big thing. And I'm not to belittle it at all, but people get killed regardless of their sexuality anyway.
Absolutely.
You know? Mm-hmm. And to automatically mark it as a hate crime is ridiculous.
Right.
And again, what I'm finding with everything, be it the gender, the Black Lives Matter, it's becoming a separate but equal society. It's not equal. Like, we're all, like, you know, being nice to one another, understanding one another. It's becoming a separate but equal type of thing. And that doesn't bring us together. That basically divides us, as it has been proven in the past. So, you know, when I see this whole thing happening, I mean, it bothers me because it leads into so many other things. That's the whole problem.
Yes.
You know, and people don't understand that. Yep. You know, and they just get on the next trend and they go with it. But then when you've transitioned over and you realize that that isn't what you wanted, I mean, that's a whole nother trauma, psychologically, physically, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's a bummer.
100%, Tim.
Anyway, okay, well, thank you very much. And thanks for being gutsy enough to take on this conversation, because a lot of people, one, can't listen to it and understand, and a lot of people just, you know, they'll say they support trans and all that stuff, but in their hearts and soul they don't. But on the outside, to go along with the crowd, they do, which, again, to me, that's wrong, because you're not being honest yourself or with people you're dealing with. But thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, let me remind folks, we are staying on for about 20 more minutes with Sherry Glevis, who does express a lot of courage, and we'll get into that in a second. I just want to let you guys know that you can call in. We want you to be part of the conversation. We love to hear from people here on the 4-H show, and the phone number is 1-802-496-4951. That's 802-496-4951. And when I mentioned discrimination just before we reached the top of the hour before, you did mention some severe, you know, physical mobs, vandalism, needing protection to be out in public and saying these things. What about financial discrimination? Are folks who are you know, are speaking up and want to have this conversation and want to ask questions and have debate on this topic, how are they being maybe financially you know, through censorship? And
absolutely, people are outright fired, and then there are other ways to hurt people by hurting their reputation. Or I think I had told you something about this biologist, Colin Wright. He's an example. He was just a academic, you know, studying insects, you know, and getting his PhD and planning on an academic career. But as a biologist, he was starting to notice this gender ideology being accepted by other biologists. And he's like, wait a minute, like, you know, we biologists know that there are just two sexes, you know, that they're male and female and you can't change sex. And, you know, and now these things are taboo, you know, to say. And he was noticing other biologists going along with it, you know, so that they wouldn't hurt their own careers. So he stepped out of line and just gave up a career in academics because he started to be, you know, censored and attacked and these sort of things. And then just realizing, okay, at this point, nobody's going to hire me because I'm speaking up and saying, you know, this isn't factually correct, you know, that the sex is not a spectrum, you know, and so on and so forth. So he has now made a career out of speaking about gender ideology as a biologist. And I think it was about 6 months ago, a trigonometry interviewed him. They came to the United States. And at that point, his PayPal account had just been shut down. It's his primary method of income. You know, like through Patreon, you know, people donate for his content and everything. And yeah, just out of nowhere, PayPal shuts him down. This is a common thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of it through Patreon, too, and all of when you get deplatformed by Facebook or YouTube. If you're a business, if you're in business for yourself and this is your business, that's a huge financial.
It's happened to me. I mean, I'm shadow behind two YouTube channels, you know, that are shadow banned. And
what does that mean, shadow banned?
It's when your videos will still be there, but people aren't going to see them. Or when I make comments on other content creators or other videos, nobody seems to ever see my comments, and I'll look, or I'll get a notification that somebody liked a comment, but when I go to it, I can't, there's no likes at all on any of my comments. So shadow ban means, you know, people probably liked them, but we can't see it. You know, there's all kinds of ways that the tech companies are manipulating people who have the wrong think, you know, like I said before. And I've also been punished on Facebook. I have two business pages as a tarotist and astrologer, and they blocked me from being able to create events, so I can't promote classes anymore. And just this week, I got an email saying that they shut down my ads accounts, so I can't advertise anymore. Because and the only explanation they gave me was I violated community standards, which I don't know what, you know. So I try to ask them. I write back and say, well, what community standards, can you be specific? And I got a reply in the German language that I couldn't even read.
Wow.
And, yeah.
And that sort of encapsulates my experience, you know, how I'm seeing this play out is there's this censorship going on. I don't even know what the new playbook is. I'm not even sure. No one has spelled it out. You know, I've asked, what does equity mean? And it was really funny to watch Bernie Sanders trying to explain this. He was asked this recently. I saw it on one of these evening talk shows, and he couldn't explain it. You know, so equity, you know, what does that mean? And if you can't define it, how is that now a community standard that I could break and get punished but not even understand?
Right. Exactly.
And so I've heard somebody in the tech industry explain this, that it's not removing your right to speech. It's removing your right to be heard. Right. So we can be in our own little shadow banned world making all our comments and doing it. But the fact is, and making our YouTube videos, but if no one sees them, if the right to be on the public square, like that place in New Zealand, what was it, the Speaker's Corner or whatever?
In the UK, Speaker's Corner.
You know, where is that? We thought these technologies were supposed to offer that, but it's turning out that wherever they have power and control, which gets back to the abusive nature, I think, and the silencing is the most abusive.
Yes, it's terrifying. I don't think people realize how many people have been kicked off Twitter for saying things like men can't be women, and, you know, men shouldn't be in women's sports, you know, just saying something like that will get you permanently banned from Twitter.
Still.
Yeah.
Even with
I don't know about now. But this is it was common.
Yeah. So this was part of it. It wasn't just speaking out about the virus or all these other topics.
Right. Exactly. And that hurts people financially too. Like Megan Murphy in Canada. You know, she started a feminist organization, you know, and media network, and all, and she got, she heavily relied on Twitter, you know, to reach people, and she got banned about 4 years ago, like permanently kicked off Twitter for her views.
Oh, we have another phone call. Hold on, folks. Hello, this is WMRW. Fantastic. Yeah, we'll put you right on. Hold on a moment. Hello, caller. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic.
Good job.
What would you like? Yeah, thank you. I'm practicing.
I know I've had to do it before. So.
Yeah, welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Well, I was just talking several things. I was just talking to my son last night, and he was going off about the trans stuff, because he was communicating with someone online, and they were saying how he was narrow-minded and all this stuff. But the questions that he had were, what does it mean to you to be transgender? What does it mean? What do you get from it? And et cetera, and they just never could address any of those questions. They just deflected. So he and I just had quite, you know, he had quite a conversation in my ear last night as he was dealing with this online, getting involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
He found it, yeah, pretty ridiculous. And then the thing about they say, and a friend of mine or a former friend of mine got really upset with me, and she was like, well, it's not about sexuality, it's about gender identity. And but then I see that it is about sexuality, and I've seen someone that related to being a woman that was a man, and I've seen him pin the tail, a tail, a literal tail on his backside and strut around town when he was available. So I don't see how it can be separated from sexuality. That's the hard part for me. I've not understood that. And the mutilation of kids, so young, there's no way they could have any idea at that age what gender they might be relating to.
Yeah, what your son experienced has been something I've experienced over and over. And those of us for the past 5 years or so who've tried to broach this topic have met with just being shut down. There's
right.
there's no debate, there's no rationale. Just asking questions. Right, just asking questions makes you transphobic.
Right.
And that's used against you. So kudos to you for supporting your son. And
the hard part is I have a dear friend who claims that he relates to being a woman and has now, with the whole thing becoming such a thing, is now openly calling himself trans. And that is also a sexuality issue, is what... I don't know. It's been really curious. And now that there's all this violence, and the thing about having men dressed as women going in the women's room, a lot of places are unisex, but it just seems very deceitful, and things could happen in the women's room, you know?
Yeah, it's a safeguarding issue.
Right.
Period. It's a safeguarding issue. That's why we've had separated sex in certain areas of life to begin with.
Right.
I do want to say something about what you're saying about sexuality, because I feel like what I said earlier wasn't quite accurate when I said sexuality is a separate issue from gender.
Right.
Because first of all, It appears that some of this current trans movement is being driven by a sexual fetish, which is called autogynephilia. Which is something different than gender dysphoria, and it's when men are sexually aroused as literally being women and being seen as women. So I do feel that it has empowered many of these men to like live their fetish, you know, full time.
Right.
That's part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
And it also just the whole identity paradigm. So if you can, you know, if you can identify as any gender, regardless, then you can also identify as your sexual fetish, which sounds like what you're talking about, you know, going around town with a tail, you know, and people are really taking it to this extent, you know,
right.
Where some people have fetishes where they see themselves as being dogs, you know.
Oh yes, my son said that. He's seen that online too, where some they actually wear collars and are on a leash.
Yes. So this is related, you know, and that we're taking these people seriously and saying, "Oh, you are a dog," you know. I've heard of children in Australia identifying as cats at school,
And the teacher's being forced to go along with it, and the kids don't speak. They just meow.
Oh.
And in some of these schools, they even put, this is true, they even put litter boxes in the bathrooms for these kids.
Oh,
so this has led to all kinds of really crazy things.
What is going on here? I mean, yeah, I act like a cat sometimes, too. I have a lot of cat-like qualities. I'll get down on all four and play with my kitten and do meow and stuff, but wow. That's only play with my cat.
Yes, yes.
He knows I'm not a cat.
Yes, yeah. And you know, there's a difference between sexuality and sex.
Right.
You know, when we're discussing such a thing. So
that's true.
So
yes,
so we're true. Trying people like me are trying to say sex is important. You know, biological sex is important, and we shouldn't have to deny it.
Right.
And there's an organization actually started by, I talked about this woman, Maya Forstadter, in the UK, who was fired from her job. She ended up starting an organization there called Sex Matters.
Nice.
And that's a really good organization that's focused on exactly what we're saying now, that biological sex is relevant and matters.
And it does matter, and it's very important for stress relief.
You're funny.
Make sure you get your stress relieved.
right.
then you'll be less violent, right?
Right. And that's part of the horror, you know, that I find when we're talking about transitioning children and these puberty blocking drugs, because it makes kids infertile and also can deny orgasm, you know, for the rest of their lives.
Oh my gosh! Can you imagine?
Yeah. Before they even know what it is.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And even gender reassignment surgeons are admitting now that most people who get gender reassignment surgery will never orgasm.
Oh my gosh!
And because the puberty blocking drugs stop puberty. The child never sexually develops, so they'll never know what orgasm is.
So how did we get from the vagina monologues
to this
in literally 15 years? I mean, the vagina monologue, we
Less
were celebrating female orgasm and the importance of it.
Well, I heard that the vagina monologues got canceled.
Oh,
and she gave up doing the show altogether.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The thing is, we all have feminine and masculine energy within us. We each do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have tried to tell myself, well, maybe it's all about the feminine energies coming out that all these men want to be women.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is that, you know, it can't be denied that women hold a lot of magic, a lot of good energy. I mean, men are very important, too. But women, we are the ones that watched over the well, so to speak, and et cetera, et cetera. So women do hold a lot of magic, and I think men have been jealous of women for a very long time, like so long since they started persecuting women.
100%.
And trying to kill women and abusing women, and, you know, I've read this book, The First Sex. It's brutal when the churches started telling the men how to abuse their women and how they, you know, would get 12 well-endowed men to rape her repeatedly if she didn't toe the line until she was dead or something. I mean, so it's been a trend, and now that there's money to be made on it, as you say, and also the sterilization piece. There's so many ways they're trying to sterilize people with the wireless technology, et cetera. That's really...
Gosh, we could talk about this all day.
Really freaky.
Yeah.
Well, let's have Sherry come back.
That sounds good.
Yeah,
I'd
love to.
We'll definitely do this again because we are just about out of time.
Yes,
but,
you are.
Yeah, but this is great. Thank you for calling in, and thank you for the points that you made. They brought us right back.
Thank you, Sherry and Amy. And my kitten just came in. Well, he's 11 months tomorrow, and he just reached up and mewed and said, "Time for my lunch."
Love it. We're cat people.
We
cat
are
ladies.
Cat people. Yes, and it's Year of the Cat, so definitely.
Oh, that's right.
Well, it's also
Year of the Rabbit, Water Rabbit, which are really good people, and it's be a very good year ahead. So
I think so, with neighbors like you. Thank you for calling in.
Making it happen.
Yay.
my kitten seconds that.
Well, give her
right
our love.
At me. I saw that pink mouth. Mew.
Oh, well, thanks for calling. You have a great day.
You too now. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right, so we had a very lively show. We will do this again. Mm-hmm. Sherry, do you want to wrap up with anything that we left?
Well, thank you for letting me on your show, Amy.
Anytime. Yes. And anyone who wants to come on,
you know,
is welcome.
It's cathartic, you know. I've suffered, many of us have suffered, just for, you know, wanting to talk about this topic. Yeah. And I hope that this empowers and emboldens other people to maybe, you know, if not speak about it, at least think deeply about
sit
this.
With it. Mm-hmm. Sit with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all.
Come to your own conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, be in touch with your body and love yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You are your body.
You, I know. This is a gift. Mm-hmm. I feel so honored to be here with Sherry Glevis. And Sherry Glevis's work can be found at Sherry, Sherri, Glevis, GLEBUS.com. And we've had a wonderful conversation. I've got on this theme of women and language and insects, actually, and the dehumanizing transhuman agenda that is really behind this, if we distill it down. I have just a very short clip we're going to go out with by a woman named Laurel Erica, A-I-R-I-C-A. She speaks about the spells of the English language. I've just discovered her. She's really great. So she's going to take us out with some beautiful language while Sherry and I pack up. And our next programmer is here. He is ready to come in and rock and roll us through our Friday afternoon. Thank you for joining us at WMRW 94.5 LP in Warren. Have a great day, folks.
I do feel, Reg, that any anti-imperialist group like ours must reflect such a divergence of interests within its power base.
Agreed. Francis?
Okay, since I did that by accident, I'm going to let it play. I do have a little humor. This is Monty Python first, which I know is not the precisely best order to go in, but we did want to sneak in some humor. So it's 2 minutes, Monty Python from The Life of Brian. Let's see if you can remember this clip from back in the day, folks. Here we go. And then we'll go on to Laurel Erica. Have a great afternoon, folks.
To step into the kingdom, to use the, you know...
I do feel, Reg, that any anti-imperialist group like ours must reflect such a divergence of interests within its power base.
Agreed. Francis?
Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Reg. Provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man...
Or woman.
To rid himself...
Or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister. Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right.
Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man...
Or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stone? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
To step into the to step into the kingdom, to use the, you know, biblical terminology, the kingdom of heaven. It's a matter of perception. It's not a matter of geolocation.
Right.
It's just like, how can we see the world in a different way? Stepping into the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible is just a matter of changing our story about the world. And the changing the story, our story about the world, when enough people do that, the actual story of the world changes.
Yes. I do believe that this was probably why this, the awareness of the metal of our minds magnetizing and connecting as an energy projecting on a story can bring that story into the collective life stream.
Mm.
So now's the time for a new story to be, because it's all metaphor, which goes back to something I was going to say about what is incredibly ignorant, is to think that God is male and there's a Holy Trinity and not a metaphor, because everything is metaphor. And it's, you can't have nothing manifest, as much as science is going to, has taken, I mean, it's just the most ridiculous thing, birthing parent, not mother, not woman, pregnant person. What? This is so dumb.
Yeah.
And it is so, I mean, it is diabolical. And Orwell said, politics corrupts language, and language, once corrupted, has corrupting real-world influence, but that we can start making changes at the verbal end. That is what I'm here to introduce people to, a concept of empowerment, that if the word made the world, and our world is in anguish, must be time to get free from the spells of our language.
Yeah. It's, you know, nobody's ever asked what the sex, except for potentially some kind of insectologist of whatever that name,
entomologist.
Entomologist, that's the word. No one's ever asked the sex of an ant. Of course, you know, the queen, but the rest of the ants, they're just ants. And yes. I think this framework that you're talking about,
so right?
When people are saying birthing person, and we're neutralizing the gender of an individual as it's expressing and manifesting. And of course, I understand the fluidity of this concept and how we carry it all inside. But it's really going in line with this model of creating, reducing humans to ants.
Yes.
By saying, nope, you're just an ant. You know, and it's like people are cheering like, yes, we're just an ant, you know, and it's like, what? Why? How did we get in this path? And why are we cheering this? You know, what makes us want to celebrate this thing?
Okay, so you have evoked so many poems
of
mine, but let me just go to ant mentality. I completely agree with you. I think that there is a push for androgyny and for identical identities, and the flip from homosexuals being outcasts to now anything goes and everything goes was pretty effing quick. And I don't think that happens unless there's a unified agenda. And I think the agenda has to do with androgyny. And look at the word identity. It sounds precious. It sounds rare. But it isn't. Identical identities.
Mm.
That's what they're seeking. But to be a real identity, it's about having a very open eye. And what's at the eyes are windows to the soul. And at the center of our eye is our pupil, which means we are meant to be lifelong students of our own soul, to get to know ourselves more deeply all the time. So what I thought was stupid was thinking that all of this could come through a man. You know, it takes participation. We all are needed. We all play a role. It's not we're superior. No, we're superior. That's the same insanity.